Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the cat catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. He was Mungo Jerry in the U.S. National Tour number 6 in 2020. So welcome, Tony DeElio, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you coming. I was excited because when I read your cat's Wikipedia page, the first thing it says was, excited to perform the role that you were dreaming about since kindergarten. So it sounds like my first question is always about your history with cats. Sounds like you have a history with cats. So tell me a little bit about your first introduction to the musical.
Yeah, it runs deep. It runs really deep. So my first introduction to cats, my favorite VHS to watch in 1998 was a Barney musical. And at the front of that VHS tape was a commercial for Cats, and it was the opening number. It was like 60 seconds of what I now know is called B-roll, and it just like captivated me, but my parents didn't have it, so I just thought it was this little clip that played before Barney. Cut to, I think I was 5 years old in my cousin Christina's basement, and I saw the little Cats logo and I on its own tape, and I was like, wait a second, there's more of this. So we put it in, and her tape, something was wrong with it. So it only played up until act one. So I never knew what happened. I just got an act one version of Cats, but yeah, it was on repeat from that moment on. And during Mungo Rump, we would climb on the back of the couch down in that basement. Yeah.
That's I love where it started. So your introduction was a Barney musical, like quick.
Yes.
Like the, you know, like the cartoons that come before the movie, they cut out, yes, Cats. They cut out one song of Cats.
Yeah. It was like the trailer number to get it on VHS. Yes.
Wow.
And that was enough for me. I would like rewind the tape just to like watch that clip.
That's
I
amazing.
Like was so young. I didn't understand like what a preview was.
That is phenomenal. You know? And then you go see it. And the story I hear, because as someone who did not watch the 1998 clip, mm-hmm, and movie, I didn't have the VHS. I had a version on an iPad in probably 2019, I think. It's probably the first time I saw it. Mm-hmm. And everyone I talked to, it's like, yeah, you blew through the VHS. So it sounds like your friend watched it so much that it just stopped running in the second act.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is phenomenal. Okay. So you were hooked and you were dancing as like the two of you doing, and you were, your number was Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser. That was your favorite song at that age?
Yeah. Well, of course, Tugger, because he was really cool and I liked how he moved his hips.
Yeah.
And he had a fun song. But yeah, Mungo Rump was, I don't know, just like the underscore of it, like the vamping in that song would just always get my heart rate going a little faster. And I was with my cousin Christina, so she was Rump, and I naturally would be Mungo. And we tried to do those cartwheels, but it never
that was gonna be my question.
Out.
The cartwheels are definitely part of that version. Mm-hmm. I don't think that happened in the Broadway revival, and I don't think that happened in yours,
it
right?
Did.
Oh, it did. Okay.
It did, yeah. Those cartwheels, things changed when Andy Blankenbuehler came in to revive the original production, and there are staple moments of that show, and those double cartwheels are for sure one of them.
Okay, so you never nailed it as a kindergarten, but did it as an adult.
Yes, with proper supervision and instruction.
Yeah, and probably capabilities and, mm-hmm, practice. So, mm-hmm, walk me through like what was your take on the show as a kindergarten? Like, what did you pick up on all the craziness that was happening in that show?
I think what I picked up on was that you're just going into a world that is not the one that you live in, and you are experiencing life with these different characters. And as a kid, what drew me to it is all of them have their own personalities. Like as a kid, you pick up that they're like different colors and different ages and have these little interrelationships. Like that's what I was really fascinated with. And then on top of that, it really is what planted the seed for me to how I understand dancing, and specifically jazz dancing, which is ballet technique, except with style and with a bite.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I would get in trouble in my ballet classes as a kid for doing too much. And on stage at Cats, that's the gig.
Yeah. It's encouraged a little bit, especially as Mungo, like you're kind of supposed to be a little rambunctious and almost against authority. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That is fun. So did you, I mean, when you started your professional career, was this like always a dream role because of your, you know, your introduction to it so early?
Absolutely. I never thought that it would get produced while I was able to do it. Cause I don't know when the revival was announced to begin with in 2016, I was shocked. I mean, I was so happy, but I just had not expected a Cats revival to happen. Like that's so random. But I moved to New York in 2012, and my first job was the Tumbling Carpet in Beauty and the Beast, which was another like childhood staple. So I kind of felt like that was living out my childhood dreams, and I just got very lucky that Cats was also got to be a part of that.
That's amazing. It's interesting you say that. You just didn't think you'd get a chance, because as someone who did not know anything about Cats really until 2016, or just, you know, knew it was the punchline of a lot of jokes. Yes. Now that I am the one of the foremost experts on Cats, I think in the, you know, in the world, especially in the someone who's not done it, it's everywhere. It's still in Vienna running right now. It's running on a Royal Caribbean cruise right now. I think the South Korean cast just went to Taiwan to finish their tour or continue their tour. So it's so funny hearing you as someone who's in the industry being like, I never thought I'd get to do it. And me being like, it's running in four countries right now.
I know. See, that's me being very narrow-minded of just looking at New York theater.
Yeah, true. And that was, you know, the revival was my introduction to it. And so the 2016. So I want to now go into, I want to hear the rest of your take. Like, what else did you take as a kindergarten away from it? Like you said, Tugger, you said, you know, obviously you're doing Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser. What other parts, like what else was memorable for you as a kid?
Oh. What was memorable to me was Victoria breaking off from the group and having that solo. Now I'm unpacking this live in the moment. I think why did that stand out to me?
That's what I'm here for.
I think it's because like it's the dance element, right? Like it was seeing these living, breathing creatures want things, feel things. It's all so many freaking feelings. And seeing that dance is the way in to communicate that. And dance is like, dance being the key ingredient in that kind of storytelling was just so visceral and accessible to me, because that's just how I've always moved my body, you know? Yeah.
It's super interesting hearing you say that, because I do think like I've been very anti-kids going to see this show, but clearly I'm in the minority. And it's because I look at the plot, and the plot is very sexual and over the top and a little dark. But when you look at I do think there's like three segments of people that see it. There's the kids that are very like super young, like kindergarten age, like you were, where it's like just an experience and it's absolutely so fun and unique. Then there's the teenagers, or like the seeing it at that point where you're like, maybe you're kind of understanding your ability to dance, or especially the theater people, you're seeing it where maybe you start to understand some of that, like her dance is a coming of age story. And I don't think a kindergarten is probably that. A teenager might. And then there's the adults where it's like, do you realize the chaos that you just witnessed? And I find it so fascinating, depending on your entry point, your version of how much you liked it or like what you took from it. And so it is unique of like how you can bring in that you kind of got to experience it in all phases almost, because you got introduced so young and got to have the fun, like me and my cousin dancing around, all the way to now where you kind of really grasp what's happening.
Yes. Yeah. And because it's so layered, there's so many layers to the show and like access points to it. It's an experience. It's a spectacle, appreciating like the technical skill of it. And then you open the door of what's your interpretation of this zany, you know, world, and everyone's interpretation is different. So well, yeah.
What a transition. What a transition. I want to hear your interpretation first of the whole show, and then we'll get into a little bit about your character.
Okay. So the whole show, it's a community of characters, and gosh, how do I enter into this? Because I have such a specific point of view. Okay. So the show, big picture wise, it's a community of very different characters that all rely on one another. And it's a community of individuals, but that are all brought together under the understanding and connection to the moon specifically. Like the moon is the spirituality element. So the thing is that we talk about plot, like beginning, middle, and end. The play happens in real time for the audience. Like there's no like, and the next day, you know, like you walk into the junkyard and it's happening in real time. So it's performance art. You're watching characters exist, and the audience is to spectate and observe. And of course, if there's 2,000 people in the audience, there should be 2,000 different interpretations of that, because that's how performance art works. So I think the show is that. And then talking about theme, when it gets to Grizabella being chosen, that actually adds meaning to this of forgiveness, a community, you know, ostracizing someone because they left, and then she comes back, and then the acceptance and forgiveness is the theme at the end. And that's when the audience goes, oh, that's why we just sat through these people like rejecting her and having allyships. I'm getting a little too deep.
No, but, I love it.
But I think that's what it is. It's performance art with a message of forgiveness at the end.
I think you nailed a couple of things that I find fascinating, is that like, it is performance art in the sense, but it is still theater. So it's like, it's a different style than what I think I expect from most, because I view theater as a live, in a lot of cases, a live movie. Maybe that's very narrow-minded of me as a theater goer and not someone in the theater community as much. But I was waiting for, you said beginning, middle, end. I was also just waiting for like conflict resolution in some capacity. And I didn't really get that. And so then it became the like Sleep No More experience for any New Yorkers that have been there, but I didn't get to walk around. Like a cat's Sleep No More would be fascinating. Like, you get to just be in the junkyard and kind of walk around and experience however you want that day.
Yeah.
But it's almost like it is, I get that version, but hearing you say that and then also being like, yeah, but that's not what I think I paid my ticket for, which is so unique about the show.
Mm-hmm. It is unique. And it reminds me a lot, spelling it out like that, of A Chorus Line. The play is happening in real time, and it's the course of an audition, and you go down the line and hear all these different vignettes and all these personal stories that are entertaining. And then at the end, some people get the job and some people don't. And because we're human beings and have attached ourselves to these stories, we feel certain ways about some characters getting the job or not, or Cassie clearly having her Music in the Mirror moment. Like, there being still a hero in there, which in our case, it's Grizabella. It's, yeah, and both shows are wildly successful because audiences go in and they experience something.
I agreed. I've heard the Chorus Line comparison a couple times, and it does line up. And I know someone who's not seen it, but kind of knows now at least the premise. And it does really line up, and it is similar. I think Cats also has this advantage of, it's so bizarre that there's a novelty to it as well. So it's like, absolutely, you add this like, okay, wait, you're going to go see humans dressed up as cats, acting as cats, and treating the whole thing like they are cats, like the way the mannerisms and everything else. So that has to be, and you add in kids, because you can bring anybody any age and hopefully find it. And the other thing too, I always thought is, I noticed a very international crowd the times I've seen it, because it can be performed. Like, I'm pretty sure I could listen to in Vienna, they do it in German. Pretty sure I could watch it in German and still pick up most of what's happening.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of a unique piece of it too. But it's not the neat and tidy sitcom that I like, or movie that I went to go see, which is why we're 70 episodes in here of me arguing of how, why I wanted it different.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about that.
But let's hear about that. Let's go in. I want to hear your three words for Mungo Jerry and kind of what you thought really was like the relationships. Like, where, like, obviously we know the Mungo Jerry Rumple teaser, but I have a couple of my theories and things I've read, but curious to hear a little bit about like what your take on your cat was.
Yeah. Well, I am obsessed with those three words and have taken it with me in every role I play, because it determines your attitude, your behavior, and your relationship to others around you. And like, that is how you do ensemble building. Like, it's so freaking cool. And like, we had that exercise where we were in the circle and you had to pick one word and then go into the circle with like a combo of four or five cats, and you had to play that one word. Like, that one word controlled your entire essence. And then Chrissy would be like, okay, add a second word in. And it was really cool to do, and also sit back and watch how Mungo Rump, who are a pair, are very different from Tantomile and Corcopat. You know, that is also a duo in the ring, you know. So, and that wasn't us just like playing these characters that we think we know. It's like, okay, my first word is cocksure, which is a British slang term for not just being cocky, but like cocky to your own detriment. which is so like such a fun attitude to have, cocksure.
I don't think I've ever heard that. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Segueing into the three words, they were cocksure, streetwise, and cheeky.
Wow.
Cheeky. I mean, so like, you got a relationship with the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like the three words is so fascinating because they're so spot on. And then it's because that's the way that everyone plays it. Like, you really, you understand about the character. Mm-hmm. But I did not know cocksure. That's different. I hadn't heard that before, because I've talked to one Mungo Jerry before, but it was in, you know, many tours ago. Totally. So I don't think they remembered everything, but okay. And so you come in, you're kind of playing that. What do you think, like, how did you play the relationships with the other cats? Like, was there any that you were like, this is dad, this is cousin, brother, friends? Like, how did you play that?
Totally. Let's get into it. So, for most important relationship of all is with Rumpelteazer.
Of course.
And there are, even within our company, like when Anthony Zoss, who is Pounceville, went in as Mungo when I was swung out, their vibe was like they were boyfriend, girlfriend hanging out on the Jersey Shore. Like, you know, those two, excuse my French, assholes, you know, like very different from what Rose and I were, which were brother and sister, and clearly her older brother, her little sis. And we really developed that relationship in the rehearsal room. Just because we never left each other's sides. And that, you know, that came from with talking about boys, talking about like if we were going out that night, like, what are you wearing? Like, some like just mischievous things. Like, I don't know, like we're really soulmates in a lot of ways. And I love her. Shout out to Rose Iannico. Yeah.
I've always felt, and maybe it's just, again, the way I've experienced the show or the way I've watched it, that they are brother, sister. That they're or relatives, not a couple.
Yes.
And so, okay. So it's interesting to hear you say that. And that's fun. And it's also got to be a little bit of the, you're on tour. So you have a slightly different dynamic compared to, you know, I guess being in New York or being in one place at a time, because you're on the road and you're traveling and you're in new cities all the time. So that's got to add to that element, especially in the duos where you're the twins or, you know, you and Rump.
Mm-hmm. The change of environment and just like inside the theater, because the theater would change. Yeah. And then where you were out in reality would change. And also if Rose and I were in an Airbnb together that week, if we were living together, or if we didn't see each other outside of the show, like that, that also did impact things. But, and honey, we went on a roller coaster ride together, but we are family, you know,
love it.
Like, because so much was changing around us, we had to rely on each other and we had some bumps in the road, but that's what makes a good partnership, is being able to say like, hey, this isn't working for me. Let's talk about it. You know?
Yeah. That's so, yeah. It's such a unique piece when you're in a duo like that. And you just like, you have to feed off each other, because it's yes. going to be noticeable, because your number is together, you know, mm-hmm. it is a duo doing that. And it's really in your song, all eyes are on you two.
For 5.5 minutes.
Yeah. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
That's like, so when we were learning the show outside of our number, we were dance partners, right? Like Corcopat and Tansamile, like they do, oh my gosh, we don't even do that much partnering as them. They are partnering, like weight sharing the entire time. Rose and I, when we got to our number, that's the day that we went from dance partners to scene partners. Cause that, like, yes, you're out there physically with each other and we're picking each other up, but you gotta, like, the heart, soul, and eye contact has to be there. You know, like, mm-hmm. yeah, the audience is there, but screw them. Like, you're out there, the two of you just ping-ponging.
Yeah.
Back and forth.
Well, yeah. I mean, and then you add in the cartwheels and like the physical uh-huh. element of being able to do some of that together. It was one of the most memorable pieces of the show for me when I saw it the first time. It was
exciting.
A song stuck in my head. I couldn't stop singing it when I left. And such a unique piece. And it was something that, I mean, I knew memory and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think I realized memory was in the show. It wasn't until all of a sudden I got there and I'm like, oh, I've heard this before. That's how much I know going into most theater performances. I don't look anything up. I don't research anything. I walk in, and that's made for some interesting experiences for sure. But with this one, it's usually pretty fun. And that's what was one of my more fun takeaways from the show was I was like, I remember that. I remember the train from Skimbleshanks and some of the other stuff and being thoroughly entertained. But mm-hmm. I want to ask about a few more. What about McCavity? What's the relationship to McCavity?
I was going to say, when it comes to the older men in the tribe, Mungo does not have a father. That's kind of what plays into his terrible behavior. He doesn't really have parents, but he does have his aunties and Jenny Anydots and Miss Jelly.
Okay.
Like they don't punish me. Like, I'm not put in time out, but they give me a look. And to me, Jenny and Jelly, like, you know, keep that tail between your legs. Don't get crazy. But when it comes to the older guys, my Mungo Jerry was very visibly queer. So for me, obviously Tugger is a friend with benefits.
Yeah.
And
that's the whole cast with Tugger though, right?
Exactly. And I see, okay, so McCavity, I can say it now because I'm not doing it, but my secret was that I would sneak away at night and McCavity was kind of like grooming me to, you know, take over his reign when he like moves on, because I like looked up to him for like causing so much trouble. So anytime there was a scare of McCavity, I just like got a little tickle inside, you know.
I love that you like that you're kind of bringing that element in, and it's like I love that it's also a now that I'm done, like, because that's kind of something I always thought. I was always like, you know, they are these two, like, they're either the rich kid who knows mom and dad can bail them out type of thing, because I think that you guys wear collars, so there's some, like, maybe you're part of like the house, especially in the new movie, like you're breaking into your own house and stealing. But at the same time, there's also a little bit of like, you are kind of the, I always called you the klepto cats, like you're the ones stealing. So maybe you are working under McCavity's kind of reign. So I love hearing that you're, that you were behind the scenes kind of, you were into that.
And as far, it's funny you mentioned the collars, that kind of was a way for all of us to like learn more. Like the day that we got the costumes, it's like, oh, okay, like who's wifed up right now by an owner? And all the kitten boys who were like my buddies, like Pounceville and Tumble's shy and quiet, but Pounceville is like my buddy. Their collars didn't have that big ring on it, but Mungo's for sure did. Like, it's Mungo, Tugger, and Monk who have like these really chunky collars with like a big ring on it. And to me, it was kind of like, as an actor, I took it as him trying to fit in. Like he's not yet a grown kitten or a grown cat. He's just kind of like this teenager who is trying to be like one of the big boys.
Yeah. That does lend a lot of the other potential rumor mills, is because your collar is similar, that and everyone assumes that Monk and Tugger are brothers, that there might be some relationship there. Like maybe you're either in that family or adopted by that family that owns like, you know, five or six cats with collars.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay. I love
it. There, I'm not related to them, but like the brothers, the trifecta.
Yeah.
Of Monk, Tugger, and McCavity. A really funny story about the collars is Tion, who has our Mistopheles. We were saying like, ooh, who has a collar? And Misto does not have one. He has that bow tie. And Tion just goes, I'm free. Yeah. And just like motioned to his neck.
Love
and
it.
And then that evolved into him just saying that he's a star because he is, and he has a bow tie.
Yeah. And that's a show stopping number every time.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when T did it.
Amazing. What about in terms of the ball and the Jellicle choice? How do you look at, like, do you even consider Mungo, Jerry, and Rumpelteazer in the running?
Absolutely not.
No chance.
Absolutely not. So a joke that we had was that this light beam would come down and like would hit the wrong cat, and they would just like start like being lifted off the stage, literally the title of this podcast.
Yeah.
And Rose and I had this whole bit going where we were like, no, we don't want to go. Holding on to each other.
My newest thing is I still want to have, because especially on tour, when you're moving around city to city, I want to have a different cat picked every night and then not have that cat in the performance the next day. Like,
oh,
they
were
picked,
gosh,
and they're out. So now they got to go to the next, like the next ball, and they're out. So you're into the next one, which you would never do, because like you want to see the performers. Not, I don't mean it from a, like a standpoint of like a, you know, how talented everyone is. It's more of a standpoint of like from the storytelling. I think it'd be fun to say like, okay, we took this cat out to be reborn. Now they're gone. Next person.
And you
out.
Get a day off the next day.
Yeah. I love the way that's why you're looking at it. I'm purely writing here. And you're like, oh, I would take,
save the,
I'd take the day off. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's shift gears into a little bit of rapid fire.
Okay.
If you were not playing Mungo, who would you want to play and why? And let's say you can be any cat, doesn't matter, you know, male, female, vocal range, anything, just anybody, anyone that you want that you could just play for a day.
Okay. I'm going to go with Tugger.
You want to go out there and
the song is fun.
Yeah.
It's Mungo energy, you know, and he doesn't have to crawl that much.
Yeah. Okay. And you get to just like completely like thrust the entire show.
Absolutely.
Love it. Who are your favorite and least favorite cats? Characters, not actors.
Of course. Least favorite? I'm sorry, but Grisabella.
Oh, this is good.
I'm like, move it, girl. Like, when I saw it as a kid, I was like, move it along. Like, we get it.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And I just like, I hissed at her for a year of my life and it can't go away.
Okay.
Favorite cat? I love Gus the theater cat because he is always giving like the most Shakespearean performance of your life. Like in any moment on that stage, look over at Gus and it's like, how does Gus feel about this? I promise you it's good.
I love that.
It's good. It's always a hot take.
This is lending well for my final question, but we're not there yet. What is your favorite song?
I'm going to say Mungo Rump.
Okay. You love it. What if I take that out? Cause you did that so much. So
I love it. Okay. Honestly, the dance break of the ball ending of the opening number Jellicle song for Jellicle Cats from specifically Statistical Cats to the end.
Okay. Love it. Yeah. It's very specific. You know, you kind of were on right before the pandemic. So I kind of enjoyed asking. I know, but I've kind of enjoyed asking which cat character-wise do you think in the beginning of the pandemic, March 2020, which cat was living their best life still? Like which cat was still okay? You know, like the world shuts down, kind of a unique time. Who's still all right?
Rumpelteazer.
Why? Because that's a new one. I haven't heard anybody say that yet.
Because, honey, Rumpelteazer is a girl who looks out for herself. She makes it work. She went and when she couldn't dance anymore, got her real estate license and started selling, you know, apartments to cats. I don't know. Like, I just see Rumpelteazer as that girl who will reinvent herself in a time of need.
I just had this vision of Selling Sunset Rumpelteazer kind of crossed my mind.
Oh, 100% with hoop earrings, click clacking in with heels.
Get a little caddy with the other real estate agents. I see it.
She's competitive. Yeah.
I see it. Okay. I like that. Mm-hmm. Let's go. I think since you said your least favorite cat was Grisabella and you love Gus, I'm hoping I know where this is going, but my last question, the million-dollar question is always, I've argued at length, I don't think Grisabella is the right Jellicle choice. I know the flaws of my own argument, but I always love to hear, if you're Old Deuteronomy, who are you picking? And if it's Grisabella Defender, if not, who are you picking and why?
It's not Grisabella.
This is a hot start. Hot start. I like this.
So it's okay. And it is Gus. And here we go. It's Gus because he has proven that he has lived a full life. Like he spiritually is so settled. How he beautifully lays it out in his song. He's kind of on this like monk like level of being so wise and so at peace with everything he's done. And the justification that they give for Grisabella is it's because she stands back up and like Old Deuteronomy is looking at her like, girl, stand up. You got this. Come on, stand up. And I just, it's not enough for me. It's like, yeah, I'm happy you stood up, but honey, like take a good long look in that mirror, fix your face. Your makeup is terrible. And like, I'm going to need you to have a whole nother trip around the sun, a whole nother year of self-love, read a book, you know, maybe don't wear those kitten heels anymore. Like she needs an eat, pray, love moment before she is moved on to the heavy side lair.
Love it. So the the answer you're given of like Old Deuteronomy is telling her to stand up because she kind of collapses belting out memory. And
her like, come on. And at least that's how Brandon Michael Nace played it when we did the show. Like he looked at her like, honey, you better get up off that floor.
Yeah. Yeah, I do
like leading with like the eyebrow.
The part that you said that has really I've struggled with as the more I've talked about this is that the whole redemption story for Grisabella doesn't make sense to redeem her and immediately murder her. It's like give her her year with the tribe.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, like we accept you. Bye.
Yeah.
Like
we accept you. Peace. Good luck. I'm going to now kill you. And then you're going to come back and we're going to forget all of this.
Yeah. Because I know we say like die and kill and like the human sense. I understand that sounds like vicious. But in this science fiction musical, to go to the Heaviside Lair is like elevating yourself.
It's a reward, right?
Yeah. It's a reward. It's past the graduation stage. Get your degree.
Yeah, it's like a new life in the whole, like I enjoy putting the dark terms to it because it just makes it more entertaining, but yes, it is a like winning essentially in this world. So okay, so you are team Gus and I don't disagree with you.
Like I understand she has the big song and audiences are so conditioned to think like, but if she sang a high note at the end of act two, we have to cheer for her, right? Like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, look,
that's great. She sang her song, but she doesn't need a trophy.
Yeah. It's obviously written a certain way for that reason. So her song comes at that moment.
I understand.
I'm happy anytime someone argues against her with me. That's all it is.
I want both. I want them to say, you know, Grizz, we accept you. Pull up a chair, have dinner with us. But as I said before, look in the mirror and fix your face.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about next year.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll sing again. You'll prove your worth again. Your biggest competitor will be out of the competition. Mm-hmm. And then you're starting to look at some other cats. I've made an argument for almost everybody. So I've got arguments ready for most people.
Wow.
But I think Gus is the easiest and best, like true, if we're going to stick to the same story, redemption and like deserving and worthy and live the most cat fulfilled life, it's Gus.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if it were a 2022 reality show, the twist, like shock audiences would probably be like Victoria. Like Victoria has a secret and it's like, what? Like it's Vicky. And then the season ends and then you have to tune in for season two.
There, if you look at it from that angle, there's so many ways you could do that because you could send, like, I always joked and I still stick to this, but my answer is not one cat. It's actually Toggafoli's going together because I looked at this as the X Factor and they generally took a bunch of solos and made them a band. That's how we got One Direction and Fifth Harmony.
Absolutely.
And everything else. So if I'm voting and I'm putting it together as Old Deuteronomy, Simon Cowell, that's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that still holds merit.
Wow, I hear that. Knowing my Tugger and Misto, Tian would be like, yeah, that's cute, but I'm Beyonce.
So I think there's two things I know that skew that angle. One is that if you look up fan fiction, it's all about the two of them. And a lot of the unnecessary, or I don't know, maybe necessary, but the Instagram art that you will find is generally about the two of them.
Absolutely.
I'm also very cognizant of my own bias that I saw Leona Lewis as my first Grisabella. And so I was like, I witnessed an X Factor champion. So that might have had a little
champion.
Bit. Yeah, she won.
I forgot
right?
She was a champion.
I think she won. So I do think that I'm a little skewed and that when I walked in, I had a little X Factor mindset going in to begin with. Mm. But I still stick to it. That's my answer. If anybody asks me, if I was logical, I'd argue Gus every day.
Okay.
But I think it all depends
on. It's fun. Absolutely. It's fun to like go down the line and be like, who really wants to contend here? Who's trying to go? Alonso is not an option because the job that Alonso wants is Monkestrap.
Yep.
He wants Monk's spot.
And Monk isn't really an option because he wants old Deuteronomies.
Yeah, exactly. There is a ladder to climb. These kitty cats are career oriented.
But you could make a lot of arguments because it all depends on your criteria for how you pick his old Deuteronomy. So if it's who has deserved, you could argue Demeter has gone through some stuff. You could argue that, you know,
She's been through the most.
You could argue that Bustifer is a strain and just like needs to get out of there. You know, there's a lot of different ways. McCavity is probably, if you got rid of him, would help the tribe the most because of the problems he caused. So it all depends on what you deem old Deuteronomy is going to say. And my biggest question, which is an unanswerable question, because we only get one ball and we've only have an answer of rid of one ball, but does he make the same criteria every year?
Yes. The way that I interpret it, the way that Monk like proudly recites what the evening entails and how old Deut talks about it, it to me is so like it's transcribed on this scroll of cat lore, you know, like the Jellicles meet once a year to blah blah blah.
So it's interesting you say that because I think that the ball is a annual, we know it's going to happen, but how he makes the decision, I would argue, I think has to be different. Or how does he like, do you have a redemption story every year? Because that's like for a forgiveness story every year. It feels odd. And that's what I struggle to wrap my head around of like, because I think a few people have argued and explained that like, oh, he made his mind up when she first came out. And it's like, I'm going to teach a lesson. I'm like, well, is he teaching a lesson every year? Can he just like off the person that deserves it most?
I think it really is as simple as you just said. It's like there will be the Jellicle choice. And I think that redemption and forgiveness is then a byproduct of why it is Grisabella. It's like, I think it's whoever's ready to move on. And I think redemption, forgiveness, it sums up Grisabella's moment. And then if it were to be Gus, it's his wisdom and life experience and honestly transcendence. Like I listening to Gus talk, wow, I didn't realize it before this interview, but it turns out I love Gus. Gus has transcended. Okay.
Yeah. I think, well, first of all, that's what this is here. This podcast is here for. It's to make all of you who have done the show think about it in a way you have never thought about it because I'm
working.
Yeah. So that's what I'm here for. I'm trying to get different perspectives. And I'm trying to change the ending, really. I'm trying to convince somebody to write or just one day just not let Grisabella go.
Yeah.
So one day. Well, I appreciate you humoring me through all of this. So I would love to hear, you know, how can we keep up with you on social media and see what you're working on and doing?
Yeah. I mean, thank you for having me, first of all, because this is one of my favorite things to talk about. But the people in my life are like, okay, cool. Like, we get it. Like, don't talk about cats. Like, do not ask me about cats with a glass of wine in my hand because we will go in. So this has been very fun. Thank you.
I love
for
it. I've created this just as an avenue for people who want to talk about cats to have that outlet because it's a very niche group.
Yeah, it is. And I guess on a more boring note, where to keep up with me is on my Instagram is where I share all of my short films and dance videos and class. I love teaching dance and I have a really exciting year ahead. So if you want to see what's up at Tony DeLelio, Tony DaLelio on Instagram, it's all there.
Subscribe, follow, comment.
All of it, honey. And also, if you're listening to this podcast and you have made it this far, you clearly care about cats. And if you have any other theories or questions, hit me up. Because as I said, people in my life don't want to talk about this.
I love it. I still like I'm all for it. I'm ready because I know I'm wrong on certain things. Like I have been corrected and sent stuff and I love it. I'll argue with everyone.
Wow.
It is fun. The super fans of this show are passionate and knowledgeable and really have dug deep. And it's so I love it. I think it's so cool.
I want to say, like, as a fan of this show, as part of the fan base, meeting other like Jellicle fans at the stage door truly was it was a highlight of the experience for me, because I've been very fortunate to have toured a lot over the past 10 years. And there was something about like the Cats fans, similar with Kinky. It was mostly queer kids who like felt some kind of like pull and identity and safety with these characters, because, you know, as a queer person myself, I love it because gender doesn't exist in this world. It's felinity. So yeah, I don't know. And just like nerdy theater kids, which is home for me, you know?
It's, you can identify with probably one cat in the show. Absolutely. Which is what's so fun, because you can definitely walk out feeling a part of it, and you're really invited without being invited in. You know, it's mm-hmm. like you're allowed to kind of, you're given the ability to watch this unique thing, and it's kind of treated that way. It's like the cats kind of ignore you, but it's like, you know what, we'll deal with y'all. You can watch, like, welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If it were dogs, they would be starved for attention. But yeah, the cat point of view is, I know you're looking.
Yeah.
And I'm here.
Yeah, you're welcome. That is exactly it. Well, this has been a blast. So,
oh my gosh, so much fun.
And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.